that's not enough. Up first this afternoon, we welcome back to the program guitarist and singer Don Denman, one of the founding members of the band The Circle, the 1960s group that had hits like Red Rubber Ball and Turn Down Day. Well, through some magic and quite an interesting story, Don has reunited with his partner in the band, the late Tommy Dawes, to release a new song called We Thought We Could Fly. We'll hear the song, but Don joins us this afternoon. Don, great to have you with us. Can you tell the story of how this all came to pass?
Somewhere in the latter part of last year, 2021, a gentleman named Daniel Costin, a photographer who is a very good friend of the band, and we're very close to him. We deal with stuff all the time. Out of the blue, he sent me a song. And he said, Don, I want to send you this. Just listen to it. Okay, listen to it. It was a song that it was pleasant. It felt like there was a 60s feel to it. It felt like there was some Beatles influence, some Beach Boy influence. And okay, fine. I email him back. Okay, why did you send me this song? What am I supposed to be hearing? And then he then comes clean and shares with me. This was a song that was recorded by a gentleman named Andrew Sandoval in 2002, who was good friend with bandmate Tommy Dawes. And Tommy is singing all the background vocals in this song. And I went, oh my God, now I'm listening to it again. And of course, now that I know it's Tommy and I listen to the background vocals, and I go, wow, of course it's Tommy. I recognize him totally. And now a light goes off in my head. If you remember the Beatles song, Free as a Bird, we all remember, of course. All right, well, that song was done from a demo that John Lennon had done. Now, we know John Lennon passed, I think it was 1980, right. And this was mid-90s that they did this. Anyway, they took this demo, used John, and then enhanced it and made a new song out of it, and it was a big hit. I had thought, after my bandmate Tommy died, I had thought to do a song like that, if I could ever get a vocal of his that I could do something with. So all of a sudden, I'm hearing these background vocals and I go, oh, wow. Daniel, can you contact Andrew and ask him if I could get those tracks? And I told him exactly what I wanted to do. Now, I didn't know exactly how it would turn out. I just had the basic thought in my mind to do it. Andrew Sandoval was wonderful. And he said, absolutely, take it. Do whatever you want with it. Go ahead and do it. So he sent me the tracks of that whole recording, and I was able to pull off Tommy's vocals, all the thing. All right, so now I had them. Now, I didn't want to do the song, Andrew's song. I wanted to actually write something that honored Tommy and I, honored that friendship, honored the Circle chain of events, you know, the career that we had. And so I didn't know how it was going to go. So I basically had to take those vocals and work with them. Like, okay, take this section, put it here. Take that section, put it there. Take another section, put it here. And before I even wrote anything, I just put them in a way that I said, I think I can make a song out of this now. It was logical.
And you only had, what, one actual word that Tommy sang, right?
Yes, the whole thing was oohs. It was a background vocal, but the one word that he did sing was fly. So that gave me something to go on. So I said, okay, where are we going to go with the word fly? We ended up with We Thought We Could Fly. And basically, the song goes as follows. I mean, I tried to make kind of a history of he and I and honor that. All right. So the song, it starts out 1961, Lafayette College. Now, of course, I'm going to give you more details than I can put in the song, but this is the gist of it. In 1961 at Lafayette College, freshman year for both of us, at a freshman mixer, the band, that was hired, that was playing, took a break, and a couple of guys went in and picked up instruments and started playing during the band break, a couple of fellow freshmen. A friend of mine that I was hanging with listened, hey, we're looking at this. He's Don, you got to go play with them. You know, you can play too. So lugged my amp down the stairs, which is part of the lyric of the song, actually. I lugged my amp down the stairs and I asked if I can play with them. And yeah, come on, play. So we started playing and it was magic. I mean, we knew the same songs of the time, Buddy Holly, Everly Brothers, all the doo-wop stuff. And we started playing and it was just, it sounded really good. You know, like we looked at each other, wow, we should start a band.
And that was the birth of the Rondells, right?
Exactly. That was the birth of the Rondells at Lafayette College that eventually became The Circle. So, wow. Okay. So the next part of the song now takes us up to the part where, once again, I'm going to give you details. It's not all in the song, but the gist is there. We really got good at Beatles, Beach Boy, good the good harmony songs of that era. In 1964, at Spring Interfraternity Weekend, we were the rock band because we became the band on campus. The Rondells was the band to get for your fraternity party. We were the band. So we were the rock band at this big ball that had the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra as the big band and us, the rock band. And we announced we are going to do a Beatles show during one of our sets. And everybody knew us, of course. So that was a big deal. Like, and we bought long-haired wigs. We all had short hair. So we got long-haired wigs and we did a Beatles show. And that show was as good for us in terms of a big up feeling that entertainers get when you just hit a home run. And to us, it was a home run that was probably even equal to playing with the Beatles and having a hit record as The Circle. It was just mind-blowingly awesome. Anyway, Warren Covington, who was leading the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra, he was really impressed. And he thought, you know, maybe we could combine your band and my orchestra and you could step out and do this rock stuff. And he invited us to Atlantic City, where we tried it. Now that didn't work because it was just not our kind of music to do this, you know, legit orchestra stuff. But there we were in Atlantic City, and Tom and Marty and I thought, you know what? Why don't we see if we can get a job for the summer? This was spring in Atlantic City. Let's go around, see if we can get a job. Earl, original keyboard player, he was off in as an intern for med school, and he wasn't going to leave that. Tom, Marty, and I got a job at the Alibi Bar in Atlantic City on South Carolina Avenue off the boardwalk. I have no idea if it's still there or not. I doubt it. But and we played for that summer, and we also played the following summer, which is the summer of 65, and Earl was with us at that point. And at the very end of the summer, in walks a gentleman named Nat Weiss, who hears us and introduces himself. I'm Nat Weiss, and I'm partners with Beatle manager Brian Epstein, which we thought, nah, you got to be kidding. You're lying. But he said that, you know, and he said, come and give me a call and maybe we can get something going. So now I can get into a lot of details of how that went. But as far as the song goes, the point is that 64 show got us to Atlantic City, got us to meet Nat, got us to meet Brian, got us the management contract with Brian and Nat, got us to play with the Beatles, this whole thing. You know, so we thought we could fly, and we did. You know, we really flew for a little while, but then we went our separate ways, you know, and that's a part of the song. Now, before the end, there is, I'll call it the instrumental, but it's actually an a cappella vocal.
And by the way, it's, for my money, it's the best part of the song. Those incredible harmonies and the falsettos are just, it's beautiful.
Well, I was thrilled to have access to that because much of that vocal is Tommy. And that's actually what he did on that song that I got. But I was able to enhance it in a way that I was so thrilled to do. I thought, how cool is this? I took the organ part that everybody knows of Red Rubber Ball.
Right.
And in falsetto, along with what Tommy did, I sang the Red Rubber Ball organ. And so, you know, it just was thrilling to me to tie that whole thing together. All right, so now we...
It's a great callback. It's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Now, I think most people hearing it, even people who are familiar with the circle, maybe wouldn't even recognize that unless I told them. So I'm telling you, there it is. When you hear the song, make note of that. Anyway, last verse of the song, Tommy and I actually were talking about forming a band again. You know, we are now both retired. This is 2007. And that's the lyric says, bunch of old guys, 2007. We're going to form a band. He and his wife were about to drive out to Pennsylvania from New York, where my wife, Deb, and I were living. And we're going to spend a weekend and talk about redoing a band. Let's start a band. And I get a call that evening. Hey, Don. My doctor wants me to have carotid artery surgery, but he didn't want me to wait, you know, so I'm going into the hospital tonight. It's a simple operation. It's maybe a 45-minute operation, but I'll be out for the weekend. So we'll come out next weekend, okay? So, yeah, okay, well, be well, take care. And he dies on the operating table that night. Well, I can't tell you... I mean, a sudden unexpected death of someone that you really care about was devastating. And I remember I was on the phone with original keyboard player Earl Pickens, who is actually a retired surgeon now in Gainesville, Florida. And we basically cried all night on the phone. How could this happen? So... Anyway, that's the song. That's where it came from. And I found myself tearing up as I wrote it. You know, it was such an emotional thing. And having, so what I did is I did a bunch of takes, of video takes. So, you know, lip syncing the song, which our wonderful video editor was able to mix and match and do. And then we got a whole bunch of old pictures and we put them in. And my instructions were to him, I want you to take individual shots of Tommy. Now, we can do other stuff, too. But for instance, the first thing that I sing is the word fly, which is the one thing that Tommy actually sang. So he sang, I got it by himself, and I got it as a group. And when you listen to the thing, you hear that. So whenever we sing that single fly, that is basically Red Rubber Ball harmony. Even though now the song sounds nothing like Red Rubber Ball and it wasn't supposed to, but those two parts, that's Tommy and I.
Oh, and it's got that great circle sound to it.
Exactly. And I was so thrilled to be able to do that. So here we go. Fly with that original. Those are the two parts of Red Rubber Ball. You know, I start out by myself. He joins me and there's that circle sound. So able to do that. And then his oohs were really nice, you know, melodic oohs. And I made sure to mix them up where you could hear them. And then on the chorus, a chorus part, it's like, we thought we could fly. Well, there I was able to get a group harmony thing with him, you know, singing that. So to be able to one last time sing with Tommy was, I mean, I get emotional talking about it now. It was just a very special thing for me. And I just wanted to share it with people.
When you're in the studio putting everything together and you hear that sound come through the speakers of the headphones for the first time, you must have just flashed back 50 plus years and thought, oh my God, we're together again.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I have so many memories of Tommy and his music and the way he approached it and what we did together, you know, and even on the videos, you know, when I look at the pictures of us together, and there's a few videos of us together, like from Hullabaloo and Hollywood Palace, those videos. And you can even see when we look at, now we're on national television doing this, and we look at each other and smile, you know, kind of laugh. And when you see those videos, I go, oh my God, yeah, we really loved each other. It was a very special relationship.
It's amazing, too, to me that you both, even when the circle broke up, you both went into, among other things, writing and recording commercial jingles, both of you, with great success.
We did. It was I was very tickled, I don't know, to have been able to get into that, because when many people maybe know this or not, but most rock groups, even with a hit or two, don't make a lot of money. And I will be candidly tell you, the Circle never made a lot of money as the Circle. And so here we are. Now, I came from a background of like business. My dad had a sheet metal business. You know, there was that concept of like, you have to earn money, you got to earn a living, da, 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 da. And I was really torn as the Circle was breaking up, where to go. And once again, I'm going to give Tommy credit. He got the commercial thing going. He formed his own commercial production company. And I watched him do that. And I thought, you know, I think this maybe is a way where you can be legitimately in business and in music, because I really did love my music. I didn't want to leave it and actually make a living. And both of us did. So it was an interesting transition, but it enabled us to stay in music. And then when we were actually talking about getting back together again before he passed, we both still had a very intense music background that we could, I can't imagine where it might have gone, but because we both continued that music experience.
We're talking with Don Daneman here on Downtown. Last time you were on with us, you told the wonderful story about the meeting with Brian Epstein and him presenting you with the name of the band that John Lennon had come up with, and then the unusual spelling. And we didn't get a chance to talk about you out there touring with them and you guys playing for that absolutely final concert that the Beatles gave. Nobody knew at the time at Candlestick Park that would be it. But I understand that George Harrison at least dropped some hints that this might be it.
Yeah, he did. He did. You know, he was kind of walking around with a camera and he was taking pictures. And, you know, we asked him, you know, like, wow, you're taking, I mean, aren't there enough press pictures here? You know, like, he says, well, you know, this maybe this will, we don't know how much we're going to play anymore. Could this be the last? Maybe this is the last time we play. And I just want to have some personal memories of this. And well, okay, you know, that was great. You know, the biggest regret I have of having met them and been able to talk to them and a little bit of hang out is that on the last plane ride from, I think it was from San Francisco to LA, where the whole tour was still together for the last time, but this is after Candlestick Park, everybody was taking pictures with the Beatles, and they were really nice. They would pose, you know. I mean, it was very loose. The plane was just open and loose, and they were all around and taking pictures. And for some really stupid reason, we didn't want to be looked at by them as, oh, we're just silly fans of the Beatles, you know. So we didn't take the pictures. And so there, unless somebody has one, and if any of your listeners have a picture of any of us with an actual Beatle, please Send it to me. I love it. The only picture that I have ever seen that where you, I'm sort of with a Beatle is, I think it may have been in L.A., but I'm not sure what stadium it was. But it's back on from the field looking at the stage. And here I am leaning against the stage looking toward the camera. And it wasn't a picture of me. It was just a general picture. And George is walking kind of right in front, as in he's about to take the stage.
Wow.
You know, so there's, but it's not a picture. I mean, in all candor, it's not me and George. It's a picture of me with a picture of George, but I'm in it right back there, a little bit. And that is the only picture that I'm aware of any of us with it, where there's another Beatle in there. Now, there are pictures of us on stage, and you certainly can see the Beatle drums and that kind of thing, you know, but like I said, I'm going to repeat, if anybody out there has a picture of any of us with any of them, send it.
How ironic, too, that it was the Beatles' Paperback Writer that kept Red Rubber Ball out of the number one spot.
Yes, it was. And that was, when we do our show, now we have two hits. Obviously, we have Red Rubber Ball and Turn Down Day. Now, that's our main reason for being there. If you're a 60s artist and you do a show, people want to hear your hits. Okay, we have two hits. Now, what do you do in between? And we have tried to link every song that we do in between with something relevant. And we do Paperback Writer. And when we do it, I announce, ladies and gentlemen, you all know how Red Rubber Ball was such a big, huge hit, meant a lot to a lot of people. But I'm sad to share with you, Red Rubber Ball only made number two. And, you know, but at least it was our friends. Here's what was number one. And we go, Paperback, we bang right into it. And it gets a big, nice reaction.
Love it. Well, the new song is, it's so wonderful. It's great to hear you and Tommy together again. It's up on YouTube. We thought we could fly, and it's great. It's great to hear that sound and you two together again, and great to hear the story of not just the band, but a great friendship as well.
It was very special, and I'm thrilled to share it. Thank you for allowing me to share it.
Don, thank you so much. I was so glad to get your email and to hear the song, and it's great to have the chance to talk with you again.
Well, and once again, thank you for responding, and I'm honored to be able to share. Bye.